It's the Kim Munson Show, analyzing the most important stories.
That seems to me like government is establishing a religion.
The latest in politics and world affairs.
If you give people rights, women's rights, gay rights, whatever, there can't be equal rights if there's special rights.
Today's current opinions and ideas.
Surveys show that people still really prefer freedom versus force.
Is it freedom or is it force? Let's have a conversation.
Indeed. Let's have a conversation and welcome to the Kim Munson Show. Thank you to each and every one of you for joining us and for listening. And let your friends know about the show as well. I continue to hear more and more people that listen to the show, and we appreciate that immensely. So today, strive for excellence. Take care of your heart, your soul, your mind, and your body. You each are treasured and valued. You're here for a reason, and it is time to step into what we're called to do each and every day. Thank you to this team that I get to work with, and that's producer Steve, Zach, Patty, Keith, Charlie, and all the people here at Crawford Broadcasting. Producer Steve, we've got a jam-packed show today.
Yes, we do, and it's always that way when Ben Martin is with us, and rightfully so, because this is an incredible topic you guys are going to talk about today.
And it's been this series, and thank you to the Harris family who supports this show. And we've been going through the history of the Revolutionary War, and I always learn so much from Ben Martin, and so we will be focusing on that in segments 2, 3, and 4. We'll talk with Kimberly Bell, one of our sponsors. She is the owner of Kunjani Coffee out in Parker. At the bottom of the hour. So great show plan for you today. Check out our website. That's Kim Munson, MONSON.com. Sign up for our weekly newsletter there. You can email me at Kim@KimMunson.com as well. And thank you to all of you who support us. We are an independent voice. We search for truth and clarity by looking at these issues through the lens of freedom versus force, force versus freedom. If something's a good idea, you should not have to force people to do it. And we see all kinds of force going on right now. But it's never compassionate to take other people's rights, their property, their freedom, or their livelihood via force, whether with a weapon, policy, unpredictable and excessive taxation, fear, coercion, or the latest silent thief, which is government-induced inflation. And so we're going to be talking about the Southern Campaign in the Revolutionary War, and Nathanael Greene was instrumental in that. And he was a major general of the Continental Army in the Revolutionary War. He emerged from the war with a reputation as General George Washington's most talented and dependable officer, and is known for his successful command in the Southern theater of the war. He was nicknamed the Savior of the South, the Fighting Quaker. He was born in 1742. He died in 1786. And this is what he said: "I am determined to defend my rights and maintain my freedom or sell my life in the attempt." They were serious, producer Steve. He wasn't joking. They all were willing to put their lives, their lives, their fortunes, and their sacred honor on the line for this ideal that all men are created equal with these rights from God of life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness. They were serious, and they put their lives where their mouth was, for sure.
Yeah, I agree. And whether it was a statement about their own personal beliefs or the way they were conduct their lives, their warnings to their comrades. And I'm thinking of Ben Franklin saying, "We need to hang together, or we will all hang separately." Those weren't just catchy words. That was real.
Well, and as they were signing the Declaration of Independence, they could hear the British cannons just down the river. So this is no small feat on what happened on the American Revolutionary War. And you and I were talking in our pre-call that I think we really need to go through the usurpations, the complaints that the colonists had against King George, because there are some significant parallels with what was going on at that time with King George and what is going on with the PBIs, these politicians, bureaucrats, and interested parties. And when you say interested parties, think big pharma, think Hollywood, think big tech, think big media. There's a lot of parallels that is occurring between that time and this time, producer Steve.
I thought when you said King George, you were going to parallel up to King Brandon.
Yeah, there certainly are. And speaking of kings, there's a couple of headlines that I wanted to get to before we got into everything in the show. And this is reported by Colorado Peak Politics. And what I find so interesting is people don't mind paying taxes as long as somebody else is paying taxes. And you can see that with as tax increases are passed, they, for example, the tax increase in Lone Tree, they couched it with other people will pay most of the tax because they will be shopping and dining in Lone Tree. But what people didn't connect, they heard, other people will pay most of the tax. And what we really worked to try to connect for them was that they were going to be paying that increase in tax as well. But this is what you're seeing in these narratives, is if they can figure out a way to sell these tax increases to that other people are going to pay for that, then that's a way that they get them passed. But I realize that some taxes are necessary, but we are way out of the lane on taxes now. When you look at it, I bet that close to, gosh, between income taxes and sales tax and property tax and all these hidden fees, you can be bumping up at 40 to 50% of people's income is going to all of that. And then add in, Steve, the government-induced inflation. And people, everyday people, are getting squeezed big time. Yesterday when Marlon Kirsch was on with Kirsch Insurance Group, and they specialize in the Medicare arena, and the open enrollment period where you can make changes to your Medicare plans will end on December 7th. And when he talked about the Medicare increases, and I mean, that is significant for people that are on fixed incomes. And so those that have been voting for these politicians and bureaucrats that believe in bigger and bigger government because they think it's not going to hurt them, this whole inflation thing is this hidden, insidious tax. And we need to be electing people that is going to get government back in the limited lane that they're supposed to be in. And that's on the local, the county, the state, and the federal level. I think that we can do it, but my gosh, we've got to stop these big spending bills. But anyway, Steve, was there anything you wanted to say on this government-induced inflation before I get over here to talk about, speaking of kings, and that would be King Polis?
No, I'm waiting for you to get to King Polis, so go ahead.
Okay, this is from Colorado Peak Politics. And the title is Governor Polis is rocked by kickback scandals involving friends and his former chief of staff.
Okay, before you actually go into the three areas that are highlighted here, Okay. Do you remember just before Obama left office or right after, there was this constant crowing about how, transparent and scandal-free his administration was and his years in office?
I do remember that.
Mm-hmm. Get ready to hear this, that same thing, next year as Polis starts lining up for, another term. Just get ready. Now go ahead and read these things.
Well, and I just want to make a quick comment about Obama. Is apparently he has this $1 million home in, I can't remember.
More than
right
a million.
On the coast. On the Atlantic coast.
Cape Cod?
Is it Cape Cod?
Yeah.
Okay. If, in fact, the oceans are going to be rising because of climate change, that would be like about the last place that you would have your multimillion-dollar home.
Exactly.
And how is it that on just a senator's salary and a president's salary that he is affording this kind of a home as well? One just has to ask that. It always goes back to, I'm more interested in politicians that become millionaires than in a billionaire that became a politician.
And not only that, he's going to have John Kerry over for Christmas dinner.
Seriously?
No, I'm just kidding. But, just to add to your thing about why would you have a home on the coast?
Well, and I don't know. Is there going to be mass transit, or is John Kerry going to ride his bike over, or will he be riding in a fuel-powered car or an electric car that is backed up by fossil fuels? That's just a couple of questions. But anyway, here we go. Governor Polis, and again, he likes more and more taxes. First of all, it was recently reported that for three consecutive years, from 2013 to 2015, he did not pay federal income taxes. Now, he likes government, and he likes all this federal money that has been coming towards Colorado because he's been doing the bidding of the Biden administration. But if, in fact, you know, he's a rich guy, how is it that he didn't pay any federal income taxes? And it seems just the right thing to do would be to send some money in because you're advocating for higher fees on everyday hardworking people. But then guess what? And recently, his then chief of staff, Rick Palacio, skirted ethics laws and that prohibit double dipping by state employees. This complaint that was recently filed by former Arapahoe County DA George Brockler says that for at least 1 month, he was actually receiving a taxpayer check as chief of staff and was also receiving money as a consulting gig that he approved for himself. Now, that seems like a problem, producer Steve.
It was. And I don't know. I was just now talking with Ben. I'm sorry. I missed
you. Not a problem. Not a problem.
But the point is there. Every one of these things has been, you know, at least some attempt to dismiss it for some particular bizarre reason. But, you know, carry on.
Well, and then the other thing, and this is what I have seen, is that government, we have a lot of these non-governmental organizations, NGOs, and a lot of them, quote unquote, were not profits. They used to be charities. Then charity was organizations that were funded by individuals. Now, think about this, my friends. If we keep taxes low, we can choose which charities we want to give money to. But as taxes have gone up, then government has started to do these grants and these different contracts. And it is a way then that government controls these things, but also it's a way to get money to their cronies. So this last thing is apparently Polis's personal friends and business associates received government contracts totaling $1.6 million. And this was to a group known as the COVID Citizen Software Engineers. And one of the things that they did was they would track people through our cell phones. And speaking of the, you know, the Constitution and the Declaration, we are supposed to be free from search and seizure. Let's see, which one is that? Is that the Fifth Amendment? I don't know. Here, it's the Fourth Amendment. The right of the people to be secure in their persons, houses, papers, and effects against unreasonable searches and seizures shall not be violated. That's the Fourth Amendment in the Constitution. And here we have Polis giving his friends a no-bid contract to track people. Do we not see a problem with that, producer Steve?
Well, again, each one of these things will be explained away with some trivial, well, it's not, you know, it's not a big deal, and here's why it's not, to anybody who actually wants to look into it. But I don't know. It's the same old story in my mind.
Okay. Well, when we get over here to Ben Martin, we're going to go to break here in just a moment. I'm going to ask him about that before we get into the whole Revolutionary War, about the Fourth Amendment. And then this tracking people on their cell phones. It seems to me like this is just the 2021 version of some of the usurpations that the colonists had against King George. But before we do that, I have these great sponsors. And one of them that sponsors both the shows is Hooters Restaurants. They truly are entrepreneurs who care about the American idea. They have five locations, Lone Tree, Westminster, Aurora, Colorado Springs, and Loveland. And they have lunch specials Monday through Friday, 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. for dine-in and to-go. They have $8 items. They're holding the line, even with all that inflation out there. $9 items, which are your shrimp tacos, shrimp tenders and fries, and your chicken garden salad, a buffalo chicken garden salad, or Philly cheesesteaks, and then $10 items as well. So to get all that information, go to my website, Kim Munson, M-O-N-S-O-N.com. And all my sponsors are there. I highly recommend each and every one of them and thank them for their support of the show. We're going to go to break. When we come back, we'll be talking with Ben Martin.
Home ownership and private property rights help you build wealth for you and your family. RE/MAX Alliance award-winning realtor Karen Levine understands this. Supply is super tight right now. This is why you need a seasoned professional with excellent negotiating skills on your side of the table, whether buying or selling an existing home or buying a new build. As a member of the National Association of Realtors Board of Directors, Karen Levine volunteers hours of her time to help you build your American dream. Call her today at 303-877-7516. Again, that's 303-877-7516.
You'd like to get in touch with one of Kim Munson's sponsors, but you can't recall their phone number. Find a full list of advertising partners on Kim's website, kimmunson.com. That's Kim, M-O-N-S-O-N.com.
From the lakes of Minnesota.
Welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I'm Kim Munson. Thank you for joining us. Be sure and check out our website. That's Kim Munson, M-O-N-S-O-N.com. Sign up for our weekly newsletter. You can email me at Kim at kimmunson.com as well. And thank you to each and every one of you who support us. And Patty, thank you. She texted Steve to let us know it was Martha's Vineyard where Barack Michelle have their new home, which is right there on the coast. I'm looking at the pictures of it. Just beautiful. And $12 million and right there on the coast. And gosh, I would think that if the oceans are going to be rising so much, that that would not be the place that you'd want to buy your $12 million home, producer Steve.
I can't see the pictures you're looking at, but can you imagine just the roof sticking up? Is that what you...
Anyway, I want to get over here to Ben Martin. You know him. He is a patriotic historian. He's a former Army Ranger, graduate of West Point, and I had taken a class that he had offered regarding America's founding heritage, and he brought these people to life, and I hadn't, they not just these old guys in dusty history books, these were people that put their lives on the line, and so grateful to the Harris family for sponsoring our show, and I know people are really appreciating learning so much about this. Ben Martin, welcome.
Hey, I'm happy to be here this morning, Kim. How are you today?
I am good. First question, and that is the Fourth Amendment in the Constitution about the right of the people to be secure in their persons, houses, papers, and effects against unreasonable searches and seizures. And then we go over here and we see that Governor King Polis has been giving personal friends and business associates no big government contracts to be actually tracking Coloradans' movements via cell phone location. That seems to me like that is a direct affront to the Fourth Amendment in the Constitution. What do you think?
I think it is, too. I just think that the Constitution, you know, is it has the same thing. You know, we're talking about the principles. It has the same thing, but they don't have all the technical knowledge in it, you know. But you can see when it's a violation of your right to privacy, you know, your right to property, and against illegal searches and things like that. It doesn't, you know, they don't talk about electronic devices in the Constitution because they weren't available then. But it's still, it's not the instrument. It's the actual action. And if you're violating a person's privacy, you know, it doesn't matter if it's on a cell phone or if you're walking into somebody's den or something like that. It's the same thing.
Question on that, Ben. So they say that, oh, it's not government. Well, in this case, we know it is government. Well, let's think about this. He's given a no-bid contract to a private organization. So that's how they're skirting this, right? Is that government isn't doing that. But government...
they are doing it, you know. It's so... It is the same. You've given a bid, and you're just giving him money? No, you're giving him money to do a certain thing. And that certain thing, from what you're telling me, is to basically spy on people, okay? You know,
right,
without their knowledge of it. And we allow certain things like that to happen when it could be foreign espionage, you know, or some kind of international plot against Americans, you know, the defense. We relax those things sometimes, but we have special emergency provisions for those. But you don't have emergency provisions for stuff like that when if you read what the Fourth Amendment says at the end. It says that no warrant shall issue but upon probable cause supported by oath or affirmation, and particularly describing the place to be searched and the person or things to be seized. And, you know, information is the same thing. It's something to be seized. It's all of this stuff, and none of that. You know, you can't get those broad sweeping things like that without having some kind of judicial justification or just justification.
Mm-hmm. And so, the founders, and I know we're cutting into our time on the Revolutionary War, but you said something that is so important, and it is, it's not the technology, it's the action. The
right.
founders understood that human nature is constant, and so what they were protecting was individual freedom, because they know the action of tyrants, and so it's the action that is not that different from what King George was doing. So we get to the Revolutionary War. They say enough is enough, and it took a long time. And the course that I took, you talked about the different acts, and it was over a number of years. And they
Correct.
Finally said enough is enough. And then, being the gentlemen that they are, in the Declaration, they said, we are going to put this out here to the world, why we are doing this. And then they put their lives on the line. And the mm-hmm. series that we've done this year has just been terrific. Let's get to the Nathanael Greene and the Southern Campaign now, because it's important that we understand just what was going on at that time. So go ahead. Where do you want to start?
Well, I will start, you know, like you said, but just to reemphasize what you said, these people all stood up. Now, we're going into the South again, and we're going to talk about this, and this is where it really gets very active in the South now, because we're in 1781. And many of these fights were people that live in houses and stuff like that. They don't belong to the Continental Army. They're just there defending their neighbors, themselves. Their rights are being violated every day by the magistrates that the British Crown has put in power in their locations. And you know, they stand up and they fight. And there are lots of consequences that are permanent consequences, like losing a leg, losing an arm, losing your life, losing a loved one. And they put themselves out there to stand up for their rights, their inalienable rights, or their unalienable rights, and it's so important that we think about that when we go through these stories, these wonderful stories about the Revolutionary War and us fighting for our own freedom.
Well,
so,
and yeah,
go ahead.
And I'm just thinking about Nathanael Greene. Continue on. My mind, I'm thinking, what I'm thinking about is that they, generally, they were fighting, they understood that life was bigger than just what we have. And I'm comparing it in my mind to, they were really focused on the Judeo-Christian worldview, but yet they didn't force religion on people, but they had this value of individuals. And now I was talking with somebody this weekend about secularism, that I wonder if people are so fearful and giving up their freedoms because they don't think that there's anything more than just this life.
Right. And that's what they said so well there. You know, I mean, the most famous words to that effect are the ones from Patrick Henry, where he said, "Give me life or give me death." But the general feeling of the people that are our founders that fought for our independence, you know, said they would rather die as a free person than live as someone in bondage, and that's so important. You know, to you have to put that price on freedom.
Wow. Wow. And Americans have done that through the generations. I'm thinking about all the veterans that I have interviewed, and yeah. Americans have done that through the generations, standing against tyranny. So, okay, Ben Martin, you know what? I think what we may need to do is I think Kimberly Bell is going to be jumping in here in just a minute. Let's go ahead and set this up, and then just very quickly, and then we'll go to Kimberly Bell, and then we'll really hit it in the segments 3 and 4. So where are we going to go with this particular
program? Okay, well, we're going to talk about that when all of this stuff started, when the war moved to the South, and we've already laid the groundwork for that, you know, after the battles that were fought up there, and the last big battle that was fought in the North was the one right after the British left Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, and they had the Monmouth Courthouse. And the Americans who had been training during the wintertime in Valley Forge had become a professional army, and they stood their ground with the British. And the British eventually left the battlefield. The Americans were still on the battlefield. They could still call it a draw, but they left the battlefield to get on the boats to get out of there. You know, and so that was really important. And so that kind of ended all the major battles in the north, and then they shifted to the south because they thought that's where they would have more loyalists to them. Much to their surprise, when they got down there, they didn't have those same loyalists that they thought they had, or as many of them as they thought they had. And so they went down there, and then Washington, they were looking for a commander down there. We went through, in the course of a couple of years, we went through three big commanders down there. Each time they were appointing a commander, Washington put his two cents in. He said, you need Nathaniel Greene to be the commander-in-chief of the Southern Department. And each time, Congress ignored him. You know, so every time they would send a guy down there, he would lose an army, like General Benjamin Lincoln. You know, he lost Charleston, and he lost over 5,000 men in the army and all their equipment and stuff like that. And so then we send Horatio Gates down there, and Washington was warning him, don't send Gates down there. He's not a field commander. He doesn't have the courage to do all these things. And they sent him down there, and he went and fought the Battle of Camden, and he lost another army, you know, within a few months of losing the first one. So they got rid of him. This time they listened to Washington when he said, send Greene down there, and they sent Greene down there. So we're getting to the point now. This is the point where we talk about Greene, who was appointed at the end of 1780, and he comes down there to take control, and he becomes effective in 1781, early 1781. The first battle that is fought, a major battle, is fought in the South under his tutelage, or under his command, under Greene's command, is Cowpens, which we talked about before. And if you combine Cowpens with the Battle of Kings Mountain, those two turn the tide completely, because you had Cornwallis had had kind of his way. He had become the British commander-in-chief in the southern regions, and he now owned the great rich ports of Savannah and Charleston, and he had established British strongholds in all of Georgia and in South Carolina. And so at that time, at the first part of at the end of 1780 and the first part of 1781, you know, he was just feeling really proud of himself. He had really conquered. He had conquered all of South Carolina, and he was moving north into North Carolina to do the same thing there. And then all of a sudden, they have these two great patriotic victories, which are both right on the northern border of South Carolina. You know, and that's where Cornwallis is moving his forces. He's moving up that way, and all of a sudden, he has these two major battles where he loses. He loses over 2,000 people in that were either killed, wounded, or captured. And so all of a sudden, he's lost confidence in there, and he hasn't, you know, he hasn't really won over South Carolina. But he's moving, he's getting out of there, he's moving through North Carolina because he's got this vengeance against Daniel Morgan, who has just destroyed his great cavalry, the British Legion.
Right.
So
right.
That's where we're going to start. So.
Okay, let's go to break then on that, Ben Martin. We've got this set up again, just bringing these people to life. But before we do that, on the line with us is another great partner of the Kim Munson Show, and that is Kimberly Bell, and she's the owner of Kunjani Coffee, which is located out in Parker on the northwest corner of Jordan Road and Lincoln. It is such a great place, and I hear you have eggnog lattes for this season. Is that right, Kim?
Yes, we have the eggnog latte now in our specialty drinks for Christmas, you know, and the holidays.
Well, I can't believe it. With the temperatures what they are, it's kind of hard to get into the Christmas spirit. However, an eggnog latte will do that. But you're doing some special things during this holiday season.
Yeah, well, what we're doing right now is we're going to do Saturdays. We changed our hours from 7 to 5 p.m. And so people can do their private parties, events for the community or for their business. That way they can support us and then have their own private place. And so you can rent it out and we can have staff there and make the charcuterie boards and serve wine or just have the coffee, tea, play games. So that's what we thought about to doing for this season till about February.
Well, I love that. And the fact that you're in Douglas County, which is much freer than I would say some of these other counties, I've got to think that people should reach out to you for a private party to get together, because it is in Douglas County. I wanted to make that point as well.
Right. Yes, we don't have any restrictions, and we shouldn't have any restrictions. And we hopefully all the businesses will band together and just stay free. People can come in and go as they please.
Well, and that's a place to go if you want to get together with friends, family, and again, the ambiance is just beautiful at Kanjani Coffee. Would highly recommend that. And if you want to do a private party during this holiday season without all the restrictions that some of these other metro counties have, then the Kanjani Coffee is the place to go. How can people get in touch with you, Kim?
They can give us a call at 720-249-5594, 720-249-5594, or they can do send me an email, contact@kunjanicoffee, KUNJANICOFFEE.com, and you can get all that stuff on our website, kunjanicoffee.com.
Okay. Well, it sounds like fun, and I will be heading out there very soon for that eggnog latte.
Thank you.
Okay. We're going to go to break. When we come back, we'll continue the great conversation with Ben Martin. This show is brought to you by the Harris family. We greatly appreciate them. We'll be right back.
With the federal government printing money, it looks like inflation is on the horizon. That is why you should lock in a low rate now on your mortgage. Lauren Levy with Polygon Financial Group is here to help. Lauren works with a variety of lenders to assist you in finding the mortgage that is just right for you. Locking in a low rate now will save you thousands of dollars over the life of your loan. Don't procrastinate. Don't wait any longer. Call Lauren today at 303-880-8881. That's 303-880-8881.
Would you have ever dreamed that freedom of speech, freedom of thought, freedom of assembly, and freedom of religion would be under assault and attack in America? Unbelievably, it is happening right before our eyes. That is why it is important to keep free-thinking, independent voices on the airwaves, the internet, and social media. Kim Munson is one of those important voices. Help her keep independence alive. Go to KimMunson.com to contribute, to join Kim in the battle of ideas raging in America today. That's Kim Munson, MONSON.com.
And I'm proud to be an American.
Welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I'm Kim Munson. Check out our website. That's Kim Munson, MONSON.com. Sign up for our weekly newsletter there. You can email me at Kim@KimMunson.com as well. And wanted to re-mention Kirsch Insurance Group. Right now is the open enrollment period for making your plans for your 2022 Medicare plan, whether or not it's your Advantage plan or your Medicare prescriptions, and things can be changing. Kirsch Insurance Group can use their proprietary software to determine what that would look like for you for 2022 and can help you put together a plan that could save you thousands of dollars next year. So be sure and check that out. That's iKirsch, iKirsch.com, iKirsch.com. And you need to do this. You need to make your changes by December 7th, and that is right around the corner. Ben Martin, patriotic historian, former Army Ranger, West Point grad, you've set this up. Cornwallis, General Cornwallis with the British general, was feeling very successful. And then all of a sudden, Nathaniel Greene and Daniel Morgan both show up and things change for him. You've set this up. So where do we go from here?
So from here, I just wanted to mention that, you know, Washington, we talk about, appoints Green, and he goes down there. And on 13 January 1781, when he was there, Major General Green arranged the transfer of Lieutenant Colonel Light Horse Harry Lee, Henry Light Horse Harry Lee, who, you know, as we know, was a great cavalryman then. And he was the father of Robert E. Lee, and he wrote one of the first books about the Revolutionary War from the perspective of being in the Revolutionary War from the front to the beginning. So on 13 January 1781, Major General Green arranged for him to be transferred into the Southern Department to fight with them down in the South. And that was a good addition to, because you always need good cavalrymen, especially in wars like this that are in very, very rural areas with not a lot of built-up areas and lots of trees and things like that. So you need a lot of good cavalrymen there to cover ground and keep you safe. And another thing that I wanted to point out, on this day, 30 January in 1781, Light Horse Harry Lee was actually promoted on this day to Lieutenant Colonel. So I it's a good day to talk about him and those things. So we talk about, when you talked about the Battle of Cowpens, when the one will probably who Cornwallis thought was his best subordinate commander was Bannister Tarleton. You know, this guy had his legion, and he was called by most of us the Bloody Band, mm-hmm. because of mm-hmm. the way he treated people that were surrendering and stuff like that. He would kill them rather than
cruel.
Take them.
Cruel,
very cruel. And so he developed and he deserved that reputation and that nickname that he had, more like an epithet. So,
yeah.
So anyway, we talk about, so they destroyed his force, and he miraculously escaped, although he was chased by Colonel Washington, who was in charge of the cavalry at the Battle of Cowpens. And so he was chased for a long time, but he miraculously escaped, but he lost.
And Washington, was that a nephew of George Washington, or no?
He was a distant cousin. They were related,
okay.
But it wasn't really close. But he fought. He was a great field commander, and Washington knew him, and they were close. They were close in their relationship, but they weren't close in their bloodlines, I guess is what I want to say. So anyway, this enrages Cornwallis. You know, he has lost Patrick Ferguson and his 1,400 man army, and then he's lost Bannister Tarleton's force, and that was his cavalry, that was his eyes and ears, that was his protection, that was his fast moving troops, and he is just enraged that Green and Morgan have done this to him, and he has got a vendetta. He is going to go after them till hell freezes over. He says, I don't care what happens. So he takes off. First of all, Morgan and Green, you know, they're going north through North Carolina. And so here comes Cornwallis and his army, and he takes off after him. And after they've gone a little ways, a couple of weeks into this race, he feels like he's getting farther and farther behind Green and Morgan. And so he makes this drastic decision to burn not all of, but almost all of his supply train, all the wagons and all the supplies. He keeps a couple of wagons for medical
supplies.
Why would
he do that? That's
crazy.
Well,
he can move faster. And the other thing that he does, you know, and I can
so
understand
okay,
that.
So just a note here. Unlike Afghanistan, where we left everything, he decided he was going to burn his supply wagons so that the colonists could not, you know,
exactly.
have the supply wagons, right?
Right.
Okay.
The Patriot forces couldn't take that, but, you know, he wanted to get rid of it. So, he put everybody on a big diet, and they didn't have anything. They had a wagon for ammunition, and they had a wagon for some certain things, but it But then they had these other wagons that were to carry the wounded, you know, and the sick, too. So anyway, he was.
Ben, it seems to me like he's become unreasonable. He's become so emotional because he's so mad and frustrated that he's making very poor decisions. Seems like to me.
Right, the passion is there, and he does that, you know, and he does that, and he's really one of the better field commanders that the British have over here, but he lets his passion run away with him. Mm-hmm. So so they're chasing him. Then along the way, about 10 February, now, you know, the battle was in 17 January, and so now it's 10 February, and we're in the Green and Morgan's camp. And Morgan tells Green, he says, I can't do this anymore. He is really overcome. People don't even know how he got that far, how he fought the battle, and how he kept running away from the British forces that were chasing him. But Daniel Morgan has really bad sciatica, and he can no longer.
So is it Morgan or Green that says that they can't do it anymore?
No, it's Morgan, Daniel
okay.
Morgan. And so Green tries to do all these other things. He says, well, what if you can do this? What about tries to lessen the things that he has to do because he is so valuable to him, but he says, I really can't. And he has to leave. And so they appoint a new guy, a colonel. His name is Ortho Holland Williams. You know, Morgan recommends that you let him take over Morgan's command. And so that's who they appoint. And he turns out to be a really good appointee, and he does a really good job. But there's only one Daniel Morgan.
Mm-hmm.
And so everybody misses him. So they have this thing. And, you know, Green has learned from Washington when they went through, you remember the race through New Jersey to get mm-hmm. down to cross the Delaware River. It's
right.
almost the exact same thing, except they're not going south. They're going north. And the river's not the Delaware River, but it's the Dan River, which kind of runs along the northern border of North Carolina and Virginia. So there's a big race in there. There are battles along the way. There are kind of skirmishes really along the way. There's some atrocities along the way. But what happens is, you know, Green does the same things that Washington does. He kind of decoys where he's really going, and it, you know, so that he gets the enemy thinking he's going that way, and then he moves another way, so he's always one step ahead of them. And as he gets closer to where the crossings are, he sends a good lieutenant colonel named Edward Carrington to recon the crossing sites and to secure boats for their crossing. And
okay.
he does a really great job, and he does a much better job than the British intelligence, who tells him that the only way to cross the river, because it's flood stage now, you know, it's in the early
okay.
part of the year, and all the rains and stuff are going on. So the only thing that the British intelligence tells Cornwallis is you have to go to the north of the river, the upper part of the river, to where you can cross, where there's less flow, and the river's not that deep, and it'll be easier to cross on the fording sites there. But Green's intelligence, this Lieutenant Colonel Carrington, who goes up there, he finds that there are these ferries, you know, down in the southern part, and there's three of them really close to each other that can handle most of getting the army across really quickly, but then he also secures boats so that they can operate in between the ferries and carry people across too. So he has to fake Cornwallis, who's chasing him like crazy. He has to fake using that same guy that I told you about, Colonel Arthur Williams, who mm-hmm. takes over from Daniel Morgan, and he leads those guys on a wild goose chase while Green crosses down south. While they're going north, he crosses down south in the lower part of the river, and he gets everybody across, and then he calls Colonel Williams, and he says, okay, now you come across. And so then, he has it, he's about 10 miles away from where the river crossing is, or maybe 12 miles. And so he rushes there. He crosses. He has all of the use of all the ferries and everything. So he gets across really quick. And again, once more, Greene and Morgan have outsmarted Cornwallis. And this even enrages him more. He goes
okay, now
crazy.
Question. So is Williams, was he the one that was in charge of leading the British on the wild goose chase?
Yes, he was.
Okay. And so what they have done is they have gotten everybody across with these ferries and these boats, and then they get the guys that they thought the decoys across. I can only imagine Cornwallis is probably really making poor decisions because of this. Ben, I'm on the edge of my seat on this. I love these stories. We've got to go to break, and then we only have one more segment on this. But I'm talking with Ben Martin, patriotic historian, former Army Ranger, West Point grad. He is bringing these personalities, these men alive of our Revolutionary War. And these shows come to you because I have great sponsors. This show is brought to you by the Harris family and then also Castlegate Knife and Tool, which is located in Sedalia, Colorado. They are a great place to do your holiday shopping, whether or not you're shopping for a chef or a sportsman or a collector. And they have a pop-up shop now in the Castle Rock Mercantile. So be sure and check that out. Or you can always just go to their website, which is castlegate.com. That's castlegate.com. We'll be right back with Ben Martin.
Life is more than what we have in the bank. Mary Alpers and Steve Kruse with Three Points Financial understand that comprehensive financial planning is an important component for each individual to thrive and prosper. Three Points Financial provides tax, investment, and retirement planning so that you can achieve your financial independence. With so much public policy uncertainty, it is important to have the professionals at Three Points Financial working for you to navigate those uncharted waters. Check out ThreePointsFinancial.com to schedule your initial consultation to achieve your financial freedom. That's ThreePointsFinancial.com.
All of Kim's sponsors are an inclusive partnership with Kim and are not affiliated with or in partnership with KLZ or Crawford Broadcasting. If you would like to support the work of the Kim Munson Show and grow your business, contact Kim at her website, kimmunson.com. That's Kim Munson, MONSON.com.
Welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I'm Kim Munson. Check out our website. That's Kim Munson, MONSON.com. Sign up for a weekly newsletter there. Email me at kim@kimmunson.com. And thank you to all of you who support us. Okay, Ben Martin, Greene and Morgan have once again outsmarted Cornwallis. They've gotten the Continental Army, or, well, I guess it's not just the Army, but all of the Patriots across the river. What happens then?
Well, then, you know, then he goes into Virginia. Greene's forces, the Patriots, go into Virginia. And they also, you know, once you get on the other side of the river, then you have the tactical advantage, and you can guard the crossing spots, and the people are put at a disadvantage to try to get across. I mean, and you can kind of control the thing. So Cornwallis knows he can't cross now because the Americans have blocked all of them, and they're guarding all of the crossing sites. And so he drops back, and he goes back south into North Carolina. He's still in North Carolina, but he goes south of there, you know, to put some distance between his forces and Greene's forces. So he's down there, and this is where they start. The, you know, Greene has already gone through that territory of Guilford Courthouse. In fact, they camp there for a couple of days while they're waiting to meet up with Morgan. You know, so Greene is a very intelligent guy. He understands the tactical value, the operational military value of terrain. And so while he's at Guilford Courthouse, he starts looking at the terrain around there, and he says, he looks at it and he evaluates it from a military standpoint. He says, this is a great place to fight a battle. And so he's thinking about this the whole time while he's in Virginia. And then on the 22nd of February, he crosses back over the river, and they have some skirmishes there, and the armies get really close to each other, and they follow each other everywhere, but they're not wanting to risk a battle yet. But during this time, Greene has written to the governor of Virginia, who happens to be Thomas Jefferson, and he tells him, hey, look, I'm not getting enough volunteer militia guys coming in. I need more people for my army. And all miraculously, over this time while he's waiting, his army swells to almost 6,000 people. And then it kind of drops away as people desert and stuff like that. But when he gets across, and he's heading towards Guilford Courthouse, and it when the battle starts, he has 4,400 people.
Okay, so I need to clarify. So he takes the Patriots, and they cross the river
back.
And what, is he kind of trying to entice then Cornwallis to follow him to this courthouse, or was that what's happening?
They're both trying to. And the thing with Cornwallis right now is he really has to fight right now, because if he doesn't fight, he has to give up. He has lost so many people. He burned all of his, you know, he doesn't have hardly any food. There's no food in North Carolina because that land has been fought over, and the armies have gone through there and taken all the crops and all the stores of food and stuff like that. So,
got it.
And he has lost so many people. I mean, he has lost a lot of people that are sick and or they've been wounded and died and all this kind of stuff. So, you know, he has to either fight or he has to leave the field of battle, because he can't stay there any longer because his guys are dying. And, you know, the way that we looked at the American troops at Valley Forge and going down to Trenton and all that stuff, where they didn't have shoes on and their pants were all torn and all that food.
And that was in winter. Yeah,
well, and there, this is winter too, but it's in South Carolina, which is a lot different than being in New Jersey, you know?
Jersey,
so,
yes.
So, but they're still in that same ragged shape. They've had, you know, they have that no medical attention, everything. People are sick and dying and everything like that. So he has to do this fight. And so when he sees that Greene is moving to Guilford Courthouse and he's staying there, then he says, you know, this is the time to fight. And so they go there. And like I said, he has 4,400 troops with him. And the battle, I'm going to go through this really quickly so we get to, but the battle that he fights is much like the battle that was fought at Cowpens. They do three lines, you know, and they put the least reliable lines up front, and then it goes all the way to gets to the third line, which is the main line, and that's the Continentals. That's the Maryland and the Delaware Continentals that have been throughout this whole war, and they've been from the first time on Long Island, you know, where they stopped the charges so that the other troops could get back into safety. I mean, this has been the greatest, really the greatest regiments, really, that we've had.
Wow.
And so they're still there, and they're the third line again, just like they were in Cowpens. And so this is when you talk about the rage that clouds his judgment. They're fighting, and Greene is doing a great job, you know, in the three lines, and he's managing it pretty well, just like Morgan did before. And they get to that third line, and there is Cornwallis, and he sees that he's actually losing, you know. And this is the third line, you know, they've gone through. His forces have been depleted going through the first two lines, and now he's facing the Continentals from Maryland and Delaware, and they're losing. I mean, and it gets to be a hand-to-hand kind of battle, and he can't stand that he's going to lose. And so you know what he does? He fires his cannon into the melee.
Oh, my gosh.
Grape shot into the melee. Well, you know, Sullivan, I mean, not Sullivan, I'm sorry, Greene, who keeps his head, who has kept his head through all this, he always keeps his head, he realizes, hey, the battle's not worth this, you know, and he leaves. He said, I've already done enough damage to the British, and so he withdraws. So he retreats away, you know, it's an orderly retreat, but he gets away because he thinks this is crazy to be shooting cannon into there.
It is.
And, And so into your own men, and Amen. So into his men too. So he moves off, and so he loses this battle, and that's where it starts the thing where we fight, we get beat, we get up, and we fight again. So, excuse me, just a minute, I got to get some water.
Okay. Well, and Ben, we have 2 minutes left,
okay.
And so how do you want to wrap this up? This is absolutely fascinating.
So I just want to say that the only really quickly, he goes back after he does this. Cornwallis goes off. He goes to the shores to get refitted by the British Navy, but then Green goes back down into South Carolina, and he fights all these battles on all these strongholds that they have, and he loses every one of these battles. But he does that, you know, he's using his head and he's saving his troops. And every one that he does, he creates such losses and breaches of security to the forces, the British forces that, quote-unquote, win the battle, that they almost a couple of days after that, they withdraw from that position that they held. And so he's won all these battles. I mean, he's lost all these battles, but he eventually wins the whole war. And then he stays down in South Carolina, and he eventually forces all of the British troops out of South Carolina by December of 1782. And in the meantime, Cornwallis goes up into Virginia to fight the battle, to fight battles up there, and to try, and he's the one that's a British commander at Yorktown, where the American and the French get together, and along with the French Navy, and they destroy Cornwallis right there to where he has to surrender his whole army.
And we'll talk about this next month, right, Ben Martin?
Yep, I'm sorry. Yep, we will.
Okay. Fascinating. Ben Martin, thank you so much. Thank you to the Harris family for bringing this show to you. And yes, the quote for the end of the show today is Nathaniel Green. He says, "We fight, get beat, rise, and fight again. They lost the battles, but they won the war." And my friends, we live on the shoulders of giants. We are Americans. So be grateful today. Read great books. Think good thoughts. Listen to beautiful music. Communicate and listen well. Live honestly and authentically. Strive for high ideals. And like Superman, stand for truth, justice, and the American way. My friends, you are not alone. God bless you, and God bless America.